anyway, let's get going as we get through this. There's a fair amount to run through. I think just in terms of key highlights, distributable earnings available for distribution of around about, or delivering 3% for the year. That's in line with guidance that we put out in the pre-close and early in the year. H2 earnings basically the same, coming in at around about 3% growth. From an NAV perspective, 2% growth in NAV over the year, and that's been driven by our offshore activity, and there's a little bit more detail on that as we get through the presentation. Obviously, I think for 2020, it's been a massive focus on offshore activity. And so over the last 12 months, we've deployed 4.3 billion rand offshore. That the balance sheet now sits 35% exposed to largely European and UK markets. There's been a big increase, obviously, in our logistics platform offshore, taking that from 42.9% to 75%, acquiring two Belgian assets in December 2019, that will be transferred into that logistics platform upon the refinancing of that business. Obviously, the investment into the light industrial platform in Western Europe and an increase in the investments in the UK to 38%, as well as the sell down of Australia from 21% to 9%. There's been a lot of work done in South Africa in terms of recycling capital, and we have sold 1.2 billion rands worth of properties. That's 10 properties. We've sold those at a discount of 1.9% relative to book value or carrying value. So I think that's a great result in the context of the environment in which we're operating. Today we sit on 1.5 billion rands worth of cash or guarantees. There's 900 million rands worth of guarantees in that number. That is bank guarantees received on assets that have been sold and are awaiting transfer. At a high level, quickly just running through the different regions, South Africa, like-for-like MPI growth of 0.9%, so positive again this year. Certainly challenging, and Daryl will get into the detail on that shortly. In terms of leasing activity across all our platforms, it has been a good story for the year to 31 March, with 92% of space being relet in South Africa, in Europe 76%, and in the UK all of the space, and we'll get onto some of that detail later on in the presentation. In terms of Europe, again, that underpins the results for the year, with NPI growth of 9% on a like-for-like basis and distribution growth of 8.4%, and in the UK, 3.1% like-for-like NPI growth and 1.6 DPS. I think just a quick mention, in terms of the leasing activity in Europe, where 7%, where positive reversions of 7% achieved across the activity there, and in Europe, in the UK, where we generated 30% positive reversions on the letting activity. And interestingly, on rent reviews, that number was significantly higher at north of 50%. I think just giving you a quick snapshot of the business and where it is today, and a glance, and there's a lot of detail on the slide, so I'm not going to talk about every single number, but you certainly have a diversified balance sheet that today, on an IFRS basis, shows us 65% in South Africa and 35% offshore. But if we just look at it on a, I know we've moved away from proportionately consolidating everything, but on that sort of basis, you're closer to 50% offshore right now, and that will normalize over the next couple of months to just below 50 as we sell part of Belgium into the platform. And I think there's, interestingly to note, a much larger focus or exposure to global logistics markets given the recent transaction in Europe. And we'll get on to how we see that playing out in light of the COVID pandemic, but it's certainly one to watch and a good place for us to be over the next few years. In terms of the metrics, I have spoken to a lot of them. I know I've mentioned NAV, and the 11.5% increase in NAV was driven by offshore. I think it's better to focus on the 2% NAV per share growth, which also incorporates the fact that there was equity raised during the year. But certainly a strong result from offshore platforms that drove a lot of our NAV growth over time. A big focus, obviously, on the balance sheet, and we knew that our short-term gearing position was going to tick up. That sits today at 47.5%. It's a marginal tick up from the pre-close, and that's due to FX translations at year-end and the movement in the rand. But we continue to expect that to normalize at around 34% over the coming months. And the flight path, the de-gearing flight path, is well underway, and we'll get into more of that detail over time. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the key story from offshore has been on the leasing activity.
Thank you, Andrew. Good morning, everyone. I think it's a it's a tale of two stories here. You know, we are reporting FY20, and as a business, we've achieved much over that period. I think we certainly, you know, there's so much positivity to talk about for March results. But as most of you would be concerned naturally about where we're going to sit post COVID. But before we get into that detail, if I can just need to take a step back into the prior year. We spent a lot of time over the course of that year going through our purpose again, revisiting the purpose of the business, revisiting the strategy of the business. And up until March this year, it was unchanged. I do want to give a congratulations to Andrew for the performance of bidding down that European logistics acquisition, because we will all benefit from that as a business going forward. You can see a significant impact already in a very short space of time with a significant uplift in logistics, where we actually believe that's where the real strength of this portfolio is going to come from. And he put in an inordinate amount of time getting through that deal over the course of from October till around really January this year. So we sit in a very strong position now. As a leadership team, I've been amazed at and very chuffed with the dual CEO. I hope our board feels the same way. It's a pity they're not in the room, because there might be a smile or perhaps a frown. But it's been a good opportunity of merging two different skill sets, hands-on property skills with the financial nous of closing a deal of that size. So if we just talk about what the business is, it's certainly, we have pitched ourselves as being recognized as SA's leading REIT. That what that means for us is owning the best assets, providing an out of the ordinary experience for our clients, our tenants, and our stakeholders, having the best people on the ground, and giving the best returns on a risk-adjusted basis. And I think we've really achieved that up until March, the March results. Our business is all about unlocking the potential of space. But that said, as we enter into this COVID environment, certainly strategy becomes something that we are focusing on for January 22. It's very much about operating in the now. What we need to do is obviously preserve revenue growth, revenue security and growth. We have to maintain client service excellence for sure. The value-added asset management is a core focus of the business, and we are very mindful of running a business with cost efficiencies and a very efficient system. We've delivered on our stated priorities, certainly navigated SA through it was a slowing and difficult environment, but as we've stated, we are property purists. We stick to the property fundamentals. As a business, we have to anticipate and mitigate leasing risk, and that was done during the course of the year with 92% of the space being let. We would support the performing assets and recycle underperforming assets, and we did sell a number of assets during the course of this year, some for strategic because they no longer fitted the strategic profile, and others because we wanted to support the investment into the European platform. So it's about proactive asset management in SA. 92% has been let. We run a 3.5% vacancy, and 10 non-core assets have been sold. We are investing in customer relationships. We pride ourselves on a strong tenant. You know, it's the way we've always operated. It's, you know, we deal with people. We don't deal via email. It's very much face-to-face. It's gritty. And we have, and it comes through in the fact that we've got a strong tenant retention, massive engagement with the tenants, particularly over the last 55 days, which has been, it's been actually a very interesting experience. We are much closer to the tenants today than ever before. And we've supported tenants through this volatility. Insofar as the balance sheet management goes, very, obviously we want to be cautious and risk, but manage the risk. We've got adequate liquidity with good headroom. We are managing the LTV with the de-gearing flight path, and that is an absolute critical activity that's taking place, and solid balance sheet position despite the significant investment activity. The continued deployment into the pan-European logistics, as I mentioned, we will end up with 35% of our assets abroad. The GLA actually is actually, we've got more GLA in Europe now in these portfolios than we do in SA, which is quite fantastic. Offshore is no longer about optionality. We've always said we would take stakes where we could get control. Well, we are now very much committed. It's a strategic commitment. It's now we're in, and we've got to bed down those businesses over the next few months. And again, we've supported and grown the Pan-European Light Industrial, the Pan-European Logistics, and our UK platform. We did continue to explore M&A activity. I think what's crucial for us, you know, when you've got a strategic filter in the business, you're able to give a quick no and a cautionary yes. And I think that's probably going to be more so going forward than ever before. We bedded down the offshore acquisitions, and we assessed a number of opportunities in SA which we didn't pursue. And I think that goes to our strategic filter. We know exactly what we're looking for in this business.
Okay, so just to quickly fly through the financial review, I know we've covered a lot of the numbers at a high level, and there's a lot of detail that comes through over the next few slides. I'm also conscious that the SENS announcement and all the detail around the financials has only recently gone out. But just to pick on some important numbers or key points on the income statement, balance sheet, and the distribution statement. So as I mentioned up front, 3% growth in earnings available for distribution. I think a core focus, as Daryl has mentioned, has been on growing that offshore platform. And today, that makes up at least in the current year, i.e. to March 2020, makes up about 20% of our operating income that comes out of South Africa, and then the dividend or investment income that comes out of the offshore platforms. That will certainly grow as we see a full year of results coming through from the UK and Europe in terms of those increased stakes. I think just flicking on to the distributable earnings bridge, and again, it tells the same story. So a big increase in the earnings coming out of Europe, the UK, and obviously the reduction in the earnings coming out of Australia as a result of selling down half of that stake at the beginning of our financial year last year. I think just pointing out on the income statement and really around our mark to markets and revaluations, there has been a lot of movement on that. From a derivative perspective, obviously with the Rand blowing out at the back end of March, obviously, and with the interest rate cuts from the SARB 200 basis points, that has led to significant negative mark-to-markets on the derivative book, but substantial foreign exchange translations upwards in terms of our asset base. The mark-to-market on South Africa, we wrote that down by approximately 400 million, and that equated to 2%. Of the asset base, and Daryl will go into a lot more detail on that shortly. And then a significant write-up of the investments offshore, underpinned really by Europe, and that has been driven by leasing activity and asset management activity on the ground, which has substantiated the write-up. In terms of balance sheet, again, I think we've focused on this a fair amount already, but a significant amount of activity that has reshaped the balance sheet and pushed it more towards an offshore focus. From a liquidity perspective, at year-end, 600 million rand of cash sitting on the balance sheet, and a further 900 million of guarantees or bank guarantees sitting there waiting for the deeds office to open up and the assets to transfer. So we're positive position from a balance sheet perspective. And the net asset value bridge tells exactly the same story. So significant movement on the investments from an offshore perspective, coupled with the debt and equity used to fund those investments, and the mark-to-markets arising out of the derivative or hedging book.
So, as I mentioned, we've discussed the SA strategy, the overall strategy. I do want to highlight SA remains a strategic focus. So whilst you've seen redeployment into Europe, we saw the sell down of two very good assets for us in SA to support the investment into Europe. We're 65% of our assets remain in South Africa. We have in-country expertise here. We believe we've got a brilliant team on the ground. We have a local market knowledge. So it's very much about, we are an SA fund with a good diversification, geography and sectoral spread with our pan-European, Peli and UK investments, and obviously the investment into Australia. So, you know, this is a tough environment, and in a stable environment for us, it's always been about building a unique space. The turbulent environment needs strategic flexibility, and that's pretty much where we are now. So it's unprecedented. The focus of the team is very much in the now, on the ground, cash collection and tenant engagement. And for Andrew and myself, it's a bit like, you know, you need eyes like a chameleon, one eye looking at the horizon and another eye looking at what's going on on the ground. And that's been a lot of the focus over the last 55 days in this business. The portfolio has demonstrated resilience, and we did achieve a 0.9% positive growth in NPR. The best performer across the sector was in retail, where we have the highest retention. We have a very strong tenant base there, which means you generally do retain them because of the quality of the assets, and very low vacancies at 1.4% in that portfolio. Very cost-conscious business, where you do pick up net utility and rates increases as a result of voids across the portfolio and vacancies. That's a factor of unlet space, and so our strategy is very much about trying to keep bums on seats. The net fixed expense was well controlled, with a reduction of 0.7% over the year. Leasing activity, 92% of the space has been relet at a negative reversion of 14%. I'll get into the detail on that later. The marginal uptick in vacancy has gone from 2.4 to 3.5%, really as a result of the supply imbalance in office, the supply-demand imbalance in the office sector, and to some degree in the industrial sector. The arrears as a percentage of collectibles has remained flat, and the bad debt expense has increased marginally as a result of tenant failures, which we were highlighting. We saw it in a slowing SA economy. That would be a very much area of focus for us going forward. Our retail portfolio has performed well. I think we've got that as a general, just under general there, where the trading density growth increased by 3.4%. And the cost of occupation for us at 6.2 is a very respectable level for our retailers to be trading in our malls. We have written down 2.3% of the investment portfolio to 16.9 billion rand. On the NPR growth and macroeconomic we showed NPR growth despite these macroeconomic challenges. I'd like to highlight three things on the slide: the vacancy of 3.5%, the WALE of 2.7, and the in-force escalations of 7.6%. The vacancies across office, industrial, and retail. Office is 6.9, industrial 3.5%, and in retail it's 1.4%. I think those, again, are very respectable levels to be operating in, considering the environment that we've just been in. The letting activity, again, draw your attention to the incentive of the lease value. 7.3% is a very respectable level to be, as incentives as a percentage of lease. The office reversions are really a product of the supply and demand imbalance. Reduction in the NPR of 16.2% in the retail portfolio was really driven as a result of two large motor dealership reversions. It was 14,000 square meters, which reset at 37% negative reversions, but we've got long dated leases now. If we strip that out of the portfolio, you'd sit with 1.2% negative in your retail. So retail's a stellar performer. The industrial performance at 8.1% negative reversions, it's a fact of where we are in SA. Manufacturing was slowing. We don't have massive exposure in the manufacturing sector, but certainly across the industrial portfolio, you did see a slowdown. Offices at 21.3 as a result of the supply imbalances. Again, I want to highlight that when we look across the office portfolio, our vacancies are quite evenly spread. So we haven't got glaring problems with individual buildings. It's just a factor of the market, supply-demand dynamics in the markets in which we operate. So we don't expect too much change in the year ahead. The property valuations, we've had 55% of the portfolio revalued. In most cases, the director's valuation has been used where the valuer's valuations are higher than ours. So we've been fairly conservative. I want to again highlight a very important thing. When you sit in a COVID environment, and I would anticipate the question, but these are valuations that were done between November and January this year. We had, the best indicator of cap rates is what you see in terms of what we've done in our portfolio. And when you consider the assets that we sold in our retail portfolio at 8.5% blended yield, we felt that the retail portfolio is correctly valued where it is currently. So we are satisfied with the valuations.
Just moving up north and looking at Europe, I know I've touched on a lot of these stats before, but I think just to reiterate, the year was all about leasing and asset management activities, and our investment rationale has always been driven by the underlying rental growth that we think is going to come through in Europe. We've certainly seen that across a lot of the portfolios, and it's great to see that being captured by our portfolio in Europe. So to deliver 9% base MPI growth in euros is a great result. We'll look to obviously try and better that next year, and there's a challenge to the team. And the level of occupancy at 95%, given what's going on and what has happened in Italy, certainly towards the back end of March in relation to tenant liquidation there and the inability to get into that space, I think that's a great answer. And you've seen a lot of the portfolio metrics continue to improve over time. We look over the last 2 years, our WALE has moved significantly, closer now to 5 years, and the team has done a great job in terms of pushing that forward. In terms of the income statement, again, just to give some further color in terms of what's happening on the ground there and gives you a snapshot of the operating information of that business. I think the key thing to point out here again is the revaluation of the underlying property. On the leasing side, as I've mentioned already, a very, very strong performance from the business. And we expect that to continue over the course of the next few months, even though there are certainly constraints in terms of our ability to lease up. After this, we've got a couple of calls in relation to Belgium and a couple of other assets, and certainly activity is still around in Europe, which is a positive sign. In terms of the light industrial portfolio, which is the smallest of all of our investments, just a recap, we put 10 million euros to work in that portfolio in around July, August of last year. There's been limited or no capital deployed into that since then, as we focused on bedding down the acquisition of the logistics portfolio. But certainly that is an exciting space for us. It provides a lot of synergies with the bigger box logistics portfolio. We've seen cap rates moving quite sharply downwards in terms of compression, and the occupier market still remains strong. So we definitely think that is the space that offers a lot of potential for us over the course of the next 12 to 24 months. We will be conservative and measured around capital deployment, but we certainly see that as an opportunity over the medium term. In terms of the UK, again, I think you've obviously seen us move to a 38% interest in that business, up from 10% this time last year. So a significant focus on making sure that we put our capital to work and take positions of influence. The performance of that underlying portfolio has also been interesting in terms of its ability to lease up, and all the performance is coming through the urban logistics light industrial assets that we own. You've seen that also from an acquisition perspective, where we bought 5 new assets during the year at a blended yield of 7%. There's some of those assets that are currently retail warehousing, but with a strong ability to convert those into urban logistics or light industrial last mile logistics assets in the southeast. The target there is not just rental growth, but cap rate compression as and when we're able to convert those assets. And I think the acquisition activity has certainly given this business quite an interesting slant in terms of strong cash flows underpinned by the supermarket portfolio and strong rental upside from the urban logistics last mile segment of the portfolio. In terms of the income statement, I think just to point out, like in Europe, it's just gone the other way. Fair value adjustments of £24 million. That is really driven by there's some mark-to-markets on the derivative book of around about £5 million. The rest were write down, so £19 million of impairments at year-end. £4 million of that were transaction costs that linked to deals that were done very late on in the year and have been written off. And the remainder, which is about £14 million, is COVID-related and really related to one retail asset up in the northeast of the country. Leasing activity, although the numbers are significantly smaller than what we've seen in Europe and in South Africa, it certainly gives us a good sense of what to expect going forward and supports the investment rationale into some of these assets. You'll see on that slide that all of the leasing activity in the year was in the light industrial space, and the rent reviews, the majority was in light industrial or urban logistics. And the numbers coming out of that are significant. So in Stirling, to achieve positive reversions of 29% on the rent reviews to achieve more than 53% on a net effective basis is an incredible result. And the vacancy that currently sits there, linked to some insolvencies at the back end of the year, we expect to be able to release that space at significant reversions of between 25 and 30%. So again, a good story. It is a small business or small portfolio, making up 5% of our balance sheet, but there's some good upside in that business. In terms of Australia, there isn't much more to report. The guys have done an amazing job in Aussie, and certainly for us, if I take a step back from it, it's all about their balance sheet and how they've positioned that. So with a gearing ratio of 22% and no maturities or debt maturities until FY23, not quite sure what the guys are going to be doing for the next few years. But certainly a nice place to be, some stable cash flow coming out of that, and we are quite pleased with that investment. As Gerald mentioned, capital allocation, and a lot of that has been the recycling of South African assets over the year. Some of that was assets that had kind of didn't meet our investment criteria anymore, but some that were sold to support the capital deployment into Europe. And we've done that effectively on 140 basis point spread between where we've how we funded it and how we've deployed it. So certainly been earnings enhancing, but we also haven't taken our eye off the ball in terms of what that does from an NAV perspective. More to come over the next 12 months, as we obviously expect $900 million to flow into our bank accounts over the next few weeks as the deeds offices open up. A further 8 properties sit on the balance sheet as held for sale. It's only $400 million. And we are in discussions with several investors right now to come in for that 10% stake in the logistics platform as we'd initially set out when we announced that transaction.
As mentioned, this is an unprecedented and very fluid event, and we expect that COVID will have far-reaching implications. On a positive note, and one doesn't want to appear that we're immune, because for sure we anticipate that the portfolio, we will get banged up a little bit, but we will get through the other side. The team that you've got prior to COVID, the properties that you had prior to COVID, still there. And in fact, I would argue that what we have post-COVID is a much more resilient defensive platform in Europe and in-country expertise there as well. So I'll just state a quote that I read recently. The Chinese leader Zhu Enlai in 1970 was asked about his opinion on the social impact of the French Revolution in 1789. That's pretty much 200 years prior, to which he replied, "It's too soon to tell." And I think that's pretty much where we are at the moment. We can't react quickly. You can't overreact. You can't reset your portfolios. These are hard bricks and mortar assets that are very much embedded, and they meet the strategic filter of this portfolio. So for us, it's about navigating a very difficult space, which I think our team is doing a commendable job. What we've seen globally, as we anticipated, retail was hit first and it was hit hardest, with only essential traders around the world trading during the lockdown period, with some gradual relaxation now. Demand side pressure will definitely impact SMMEs, independent businesses, and some of the non-essential traders. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge going forward. And unfortunately, that is driven to a large degree as well by sentiment. So when sentiment improves, we would expect to see some life coming back into that side of the economy. There's been a massive ramp up in online retail activity and e-commerce penetration. And for one, we were fairly immune in South Africa to retail activity, certainly to the scale that we were seeing abroad. But I think this certainly will accelerate the use of that, and it will change customer behavior. It has increased the need for storage space as a result of supply chain reconfigurations. There's been pressure globally on landlords to provide relief through this crisis. And global cash collections, interestingly enough, have been surprisingly strong. Retail was most adversely impacted, but our logistics has been very resilient in this market. we do benefit from a diversified balance sheet. We've got sectoral and geographic spread with in-country expertise. So if we look at the snapshot of that slide, a contribution by sector on the last column, if you look at that, this is by income, 25% retail, 10% industrial, 46% logistics, 19% in office. So we're well diversified where we've got in-country expertise. The investment allocation was driven as a result. We are property purists. Sound property fundamentals are the structural drivers of this. We have good exposure to logistics, and that's been it has shown to be very resilient through this process. And the geographical spread has really, buffered us in terms of our local or domestic economy. 56% of the portfolio is now in logistics and industrial. So again, I think we're in good space there. Your attention, if I can, just draw, I think, to the middle column here, because this for us is the most important thing to mention. Retail has been most impacted. 25% of our portfolio is in retail. Most of that sits in South Africa. So it's around 24% in SA. 83% of that is secured by the large national retail chains. So to give you some level of comfort, if there's pain to be taken by some of the retailers, and there will be, we will get through this crisis because 83% of these people are strong businesses. They're big businesses. They are not closing down, and they will go through this period with suffering as well. But we expect to see them on the other side. So 17% becomes your more vulnerable tenants, and that is your small independent retailers. It's a nominal portion of the SA balance sheet, and we are managing that process fluidly. In the UK, it's 5% of the balance sheet. 66% of that portfolio is in retail. 38% single-tenanted supermarkets, essential traders, Tesco. 19% of that is in big box retail, which we are planning on conversions. And it was acquired for a planning to convert to last mile logistics. So it's not like we are in a crisis trying to convert. The purpose of that, if you looked at that Beckton deal we did in December last year, it was with a focus of converting that to last mile logistics when the big box leases came up for a review. So what to expect is certainly potential income loss in the short term from the discounts afforded to the nationals and large retailers of non-essential goods and services. SMME, we provided proper relief, and we'll get into some of the detail later. And the increased cost of operating malls in a number of respects. You have to try and contain the entrances, and that there are some cost reduction measures because you're only opening up fewer entrances, but there are cost increases as a result of vacancies, voids, and for providing PPE services, that's the protective equipment and health services into those malls, which will carry an additional cost. So we expect in the medium term an increased amount of business failure, a very slow return to retail. We anticipate that metropolitan malls will be more affected than the non-metropolitan nodes. And, you know, so we are quite strong in areas like Dietlabing in the Free State, Newcastle, and in Zevenbrugge in Cape Town. These are malls that we expect will be fairly resilient during this period. And the majority of the retail base will return to work over the next, as we go through various stages of lockdown, and will gradually gather some momentum. If anything, you know, if you want to look at behavioral change and what you can expect, it's very difficult to predict. If you saw what happened on the public holiday in Cape Town, people are social animals, you know, and they are going to want to get out, and they are going to want to reconnect, and it's just going to take time for that comfort and I guess the social distancing measures to get more and more relaxed over time. So we've been very resilient. 56% of the balance sheet is in logistics. We see a massive uptick in the demand for logistics and storage. You know, when you've got just-in-time services where the product has been pushed back into country of origin like China, we expect that there'll be a massive uptick in demand for in-country storage, particularly in Europe. So that is an important driver. 88% of our tenant base is considered investment grade for us. So what would that be? It's large national retailers, large listed tenants, government, major franchisees, national tenants, which are not listed. So you've got privately owned national businesses, which are often as big as listed businesses. listed tenants. Franchisees, we expect that if the franchisors are providing support, and some of these franchisees are company-owned stores, and we expect that they will resume business when they're able to. So, again, there's some protection there, and the medium and large professional firms will get through this crisis, and that would for us be classified as investment-grade business. So 88% of the portfolio is pretty much, yeah, comprises our portfolio. 88% of our tenant base is A grade. Okay. In an environment like this, what have we seen over the last 55 days? We've had a massive and heightened engagement with every one of our tenants, whether it's been online telecoms or telephone calls. We're not a business that does business with people on email. It's best to deal with the issues face-to-face or telephonically if you can, to get a better sense of where the pain points are. We've provided support to the SMMEs to the best of our ability. I believe we've forged much better tenant relationships as a business going forward through our rent relief measures to a number of our tenants where we've provided working capital. It's been given to tenants that are that they're in good standing. So, you know, it's given us an opportunity as well of properly looking at the business. If you're heavily in arrears or you're a slow payer, you know, you might not have achieved the same benefits of tenants that have been kept up to date. And I think that's just good business practice, and it's good for our stakeholders. We've, to the best of our ability, ensured that the malls are well tenanted after the lockdown, will be well tenanted after the lockdown restrictions are lifted. We've had the opportunity in some cases is to extend leases. So for certain concessions over April and May, we've been able to extend leases, and we've restructured leases, reset some of the leases to give people a fighting chance post lockdown. Surprisingly, the rental collection, again, has been good across the regions. If we look at April, 73% of the rent collected was collected in April, 94% in our logistics business in Europe, and 87% in UK. If you look at where we stand in May, 79% in retail, and it was 71% at the same time last month. 65% of Europe as we stand now, but we expect an uptick by the end of the month as Poland and France will only be paying rents at the end of this month. UK is at 79%. So across the sectors, in SA, we've given deferrals and discounts, which Andrew will get into the detail. That's across retail, office, and industrial. It's been deferrals. There's an element of deferral and some element of discount on the SMMEs. There's been discounts to SMMEs for sure, where we were trying to assist them in navigating this crazy time. And I think as a brand, Andrew and I are very proud of what we've stood for over this period. It's about integrity, honor, and high principles. And we've tried to the best of our ability to navigate this with our crisis, this crisis with our tenants. There's pain to be had. And I think somehow in the mess, the conversations around whether rentals or obligations or optional have come into the mix. And, you know, regardless of what you believe, whether rent is obligatory or optional, in this environment, we believe it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to assist your landlords. It's the right thing to assist SMMEs to survive this crisis, because the burden cannot be solely borne by landlords. And that's pretty much the stance we've taken. So we're in a number of negotiations with the larger players, and we haven't landed yet, but we're not landed yet, but it's ongoing face-to-face conversations. So this is a bit of a repeat, but let me get through it. Retailers have requested discounts. They came out first and hardest, of course, and we're very sensitive and empathetic towards that, because this for SMMEs, this is a brutal time. They were unable to pay rent, and we provided proper relief under the circumstances. We've made attempts to negotiate relief measures with the large and medium-sized retailers. That's a work in progress, as I mentioned earlier. And deferment structures range from 1 to 3 months with a repayment plan of 3 to 6 months. Europe and UK has only been about deferrals, no discounts. In Europe, we talk about a 1 to 3 month deferral with recoupment by December this year. In the UK, it's been where we've tried to reset, where some guys are operating on quarterly leases, try and reset and get the lease, the rental monthly. There's been no income loss to date, but there will be further requests, and so you should be aware of that. We've implemented a number of initiatives to support and ensure the sustainability. Investec's had a philosophy, and I think we live by it in the fund. We live in society, not off of it. And that's a very important message for us to convey. We've provided support to 260 car guards that were unemployed over this lockdown. We've paid their salaries. We've kept the guys that were doing the car wash employed. We've supported our service providers to maintain their ability to earn income, retain staff on our portfolio so that we are in a good state post the lockdown. We've done what is obviously from a regulatory point of view required in terms of awareness, PPEs, and on-site hygiene, and we contributed towards providing food for 160,000 kids over the next 4 months, where the school children, this is their primary meal that they get when they go to school, and we've contributed towards that and provided 6,000 masks. We're in the process of a deal with UJ University providing 6,000 masks to the JMPD and the emergency services personnel. So that will bring my section to a close. If I could just end with one quote. Winston Churchill said, "If you're going through hell, keep going," and we intend to.
All right, thanks, Daryl. I think just to run through balance sheet, I know we've covered a lot of these stats before, just to put more of it into focus. Obviously, our number one priority over the next 6 to 12 months is the de-gearing flight path as we presented in February, and again in the pre-close. And that is all really linked. The biggest mover there is the refinancing of the European business. Obviously, COVID-19 is likely to impact the implementation period. We'll get onto some of that shortly. There's obviously the disposals that are coming in as and when the deeds office opens up fully, which we expect to be in the next few weeks. Belgium, in terms of transferring that into the platform, will release a significant amount of cash flow back to South Africa, and obviously the sell down of that 10% equity stake in the platform. From a covenant and cash flow liquidity perspective, ICR sitting at 2.9 times, and that's relative to a covenant of 2 times, $1.5 billion of cash and guarantees, as I mentioned earlier, and very limited refinancing over the course of the next 12 months, with only 900 million coming up in December 2020. We've already started discussions with lenders on that commercial paper. I saw a question coming in the background. Commercial paper at the moment, we only have 54 million rand of CP outstanding, and that comes back at us in about 2 months' time. We'll obviously look to the bond markets as and when the time is right. Just in terms of that PEL refinancing, I think over the last 6 or 7 weeks, it has been slower than we had hoped, given what has happened globally and where banks are and making sure that they get their own houses in order. That certainly wasn't unexpected. We are far progressed in terms of a lot of the due diligence and the legal framework around that refinancing. We have had to go. It was originally meant to be a syndicated deal. It was, given the volatility in the markets, that has shifted to a club deal. There's obviously positive feedback coming back from several lenders. I think positively, there are a few others that have sat on the sidelines for the last 2 months that are coming back in and having a really detailed look at getting involved. And certainly feedback, and if you think about it, both from a debt and equity perspective, logistics globally and certainly more in the developed markets is number one on the radar screens and is certainly seen as the most robust and resilient sector. And so we're seeing appetite both from an equity and from a debt perspective. Don't think it's going to be overnight, but certainly we are positively optimistic about our ability to get this sorted out relatively quickly. Debt maturing in the next 12 months, I've mentioned all of that. The big movers, they're obviously the 900 million in December. And then we've got bridge facilities that we've extended to coincide with it'll be longer than when the refinancing is planned to have taken place by, but 245 million euros that we've shifted out to April, May next year, to give us the time to get the refinancing completed. And again, just setting out the various covenants across the board. And I know there are some questions coming in the background around what those covenant levels are. So hopefully this does answer some of those questions. But debt yields and ICRs across the three main areas of South Africa, Europe and UK are comfortable. And hopefully that side gives you a little bit more information. And Australia, you know, sitting at a 20% geared balance sheet really has a lot of headroom. In terms of that de-gearing flight path, as I mentioned earlier, the key movements will be around the refinancing of that platform as well as the transfer of Belgium off of our balance sheet into the PEL balance sheet that will free up both equity and the debt that we've used to finance that in the interim. And so there's a significant amount of capital that comes back to us. But the rest of that I think I've already covered. And then lastly, just from a balance sheet perspective, in terms of our risk-adjusted LTV, and we look at it both in terms of our investments as well as on the liability side, is that you can't forget the risk when looking at the various regions in which we're invested. And so even though I look through gearing, afterwards we'll be sitting at about 49% with an LTV ratio of 34% on a risk-adjusted basis. If you look at our LTVs in Western Europe and the UK, sitting at between 54% and 60%, and you evaluate that in relation to the real estate risk and the country risk in those regions relative to South Africa, that yes, has a lower LTV, but certainly sits on the higher end of the risk spectrum, we're comfortable that that look-through LTV is appropriate. And also, if we just look at what's happened to the 10-year spreads, specifically in the UK and Europe, in relation to comparing bond yields to asset yields, you've seen a widening of that over time. And so that gives you a significant amount of headroom in relation to your interest serviceability and your ability to gear up the balance sheet offshore, which again is far more efficient from a shareholder perspective. And so to close off on the balance sheet side, I think number one, the PL refinance offshore, the completion of that de-gearing flight path and normalization back to 34%, continue to bolster our liquidity and to maintain or improve our credit rating. It's certainly the core priorities for the year from a balance sheet perspective. Just looking forward over the next 12 months, and hopefully you guys haven't fallen asleep, and apologies that this has gone on a little bit longer than initially anticipated. But greater uncertainty around the leasing activity, certainly in South Africa and when the lockdowns are going to open up. Short-term cash flow will be impacted by the rental concessions. We are seeing operating costs increasing. There's certainly operating across the malls and multi-tenanted office parks, cost of additional safety, security, hygiene measures we all know about. And as Daryl touched on, I think probably more so in South Africa than we're seeing offshore right now is the heightened risk of tenant failures, and that's particularly in the retail and SME sector. And we are expecting to see a greater office or demand for office flexibility. We spoke about that this time last year. We've shifted and started playing around with a few ideas inside our office portfolio already in South Africa, and I think we're well on our way to making sure that we are able to respond to our tenants' needs. And then, as Daryl mentioned earlier, I think also logistics globally is set to benefit. And we are, again, fairly positive about what that looks like for us over the medium term. Strategic priorities, client engagement. We've had an amazing opportunity to speak to over 1,000 of our clients over the last 50 days. Active balance sheet management, which really comes down to completing that de-gearing flight path and bedding down the pan-European acquisition. We couldn't be in safer hands with Paul and his team in Europe, even though we sometimes battle to understand them and we need subtitles. The guys have been through it all before. They've seen the crisis in 08, 09 in the UK and Europe, and we're very, very happy to have them on board. And then, as Daryl mentioned earlier, humanity now more than ever. Good corporate citizenship and the ability or the support of our SMEs to make sure that they're there at the end of this. So to close off in terms of dividend and guidance, as you would have seen, or you may not have had a chance to see, we've obviously from a dividend perspective, the board has resolved to defer the dividend declaration to the extent permissible by regulators until such time as there's more certainty around the trading environment, both in South Africa and abroad. I think that is the right thing to do and certainly shows a conservative way of managing through this crisis. Daryl uses a lot of quotes. I'm going to quote Sammy Leon here, but certainly in the fog, you don't want to be running. And that's where we are right now. It's hard to see more than a couple of meters in front of you. So I think prudence and conservatism is the way to go right now. And from a guidance perspective, I think, you know, it's very, very difficult to forecast where we're going to be in 12 months' time, let alone in 3 months' time. And so the ability to provide accurate guidance to the market is limited. I just think confidence in IPF, certainly from our perspective, is strong and is underpinned by the evidence of the cash collections to date, as you would have seen with Daryl. Those are very, very strong numbers. Sound property fundamentals, robust tenant base across the globe with 88% that we would kind of term investment grade. A diversity of the earnings base, limited exposure to undercapitalized businesses, and a positive impact on COVID. So I think that really brings us to a close. I think just before we finish off, just three quick thank yous. One to the board. It's been an enormous year from the fund's perspective, obviously with the acquisition activity, huge amounts of time that we've had to lean on you and get your support and advice. And so we thank you for that. And even, you know, over the last 50, 55 days, the grey hair that sits in the background has certainly been hugely valuable to us. The management team in all geographies, I mean, I know it's been the last few weeks trying to get these results out in a work-from-home environment with not being able to come into the office, to having to do everything online. It's a massive testament to you, but also operationally over the last 12 months. I know we're in a new normal and in a new world looking forward, but certainly these are results to be proud of, and Daryl and I are immensely grateful for all of your work over time. And then to Daryl, it's been a hell of a 14, 15 months in the hot seat, and it's been, you know, fantastic having you next to me navigating this as we've gone through the last few months, and certainly the last few weeks. So that is it from us. I think what we'll do now is I was going to move over to the call or questions on the call, but I think there's some questions that have come up in the background on IT, so maybe we go there first, because it'll probably cover off a lot of what might be answered. So I think I've covered off. There was a question on commercial paper, which I've covered off. So there's only 54 million coming off in the next few months. So Nene, hopefully that answers your question. In terms of Izandla, Miego, you asked a question around the trading performance and the 26% decrease in income there. That is that's really a result of us Izandla effectively writing down their portfolio marginally by a couple of percent over the last at year end, and so that's included in the income number there. But from MPI perspective, they're trading probably a little bit ahead of where our SA portfolio is trading. Gerald, there's a question here for you from Jonathan on the SA portfolio, just in terms of rental reversions and what you'd expect to see in SA office, industrial, retail over the next few years.
Okay, that's a challenging question, Jonathan, and thanks, Andrew, for sending that one my way. I would expect much of what you've seen in the results here. You know, we reverted 21% in office, 8% in our industrial portfolio. I don't think we're going to be far off that. There are some signs here that give you protection. For example, in the industrial, well, what's going to happen in this market is there's no new supply. And the SA, you know, so in a constrained market, in a difficult market, you're going to see there's going to be no new activity coming through on the supply chain. That gives you some protection in the portfolios that you have. I think what's crucial now for us as a business is to retain tenants. If you're going to reset, it would probably be an industrial around 8%, 9%. I don't think it should veer much past where we've been, because we were seeing that slowdown. The office sector, again, if you just take a step back, but pre-COVID, we felt that our office portfolio in most of the areas we operated would be a premium product. And it was proved for us in areas like Bryanston, where we're actually getting better rents in Bryanston than we are in Sandton. So it talks to the quality of the portfolio. I think what we have to be cautious of is a cover-all strategy and all-embracing reversion. There's no doubt there will be reversions, and potentially, I guess, it could still be 20%. Our view is when you look at some of the assets, the Furs, we were going through a refurb. It was meant to be complete pretty much at the time of the lockdown, where our rentals there had gone up. If there were new tenants coming to the market today, I guess it could reset between 10 and 15%. Maybe it could even go 20%, but now, what's our business now? Lock in the whale. We're way past just putting bums in seats for short-term leases. Rather lock in, reset, get a long WALE. This is, if it is a year to do it, probably it's now, and just look to extend WALE. The retail portfolio, again, is going to be really driven by ability to sustain the SMMEs. There are leases in play with the nationals. So the large retailers. So those leases are market related. In a few circumstances, in some of the big boxes, we're considering now going through a review for tenure. And again, that gives you a lot of strength. So I don't think it'll vary much from what we presented here across the portfolio. Now maybe the retail at 1.2, if you cut out the SMMEs, will be there. Include those SMMEs, you'll probably reset at lower rentals to save these businesses. But then you'll be doing 3-year deals, not 10-year deals on those kind of deals. I think that's where we are now. Fair?
Okay. Yep. I think just you can keep going. So the amount of CapEx, again, from Nene at Standard Bank. Are you looking to deploy the same amount of CapEx over the coming year? Or will this be held back due to the uncertainty? Yeah. So maybe cover SA. Yeah. I'll talk to you. Yeah.
Thanks, Nene. I think for sure it's about more maintenance now. Maintenance and preservation. We've got to be very careful. We were ready to pull the trigger on a number of refurbs, and I think we have to see where that lands. So I think for us, cash is absolute liquidity, and cash is king right now. We're not going to be spending a lot of money on new developments.
Yeah, I think in Europe, similarly, I think there's probably a greater chance of us deploying return-generating capex in Europe, and we've got two properties that need a little bit of work, but will drive rental growth. They are probably in the top 3 or 4 assets that we own. I keep mentioning it. Daryl always talks to Hoppegarden. I always talk to Hanover. But there's a couple of million euros that we'd like to spend there, improving the quality of that asset, and we'll see rental growth coming off the back of it. And there's strong demand from a leasing perspective. And we've got the development in Hoppegarden that is completing over the course of the next 2 months, and we are far progressed in terms of rental discussions there. I think we'll use the next 12 months in Europe to just assess. We've got four or five land parcels adjacent to assets that we own. I think we'll use the time to just assess the development feasibilities of that and take stock of where things go. Another one, Nene, you're keeping us busy here. An update from the government stance on rates and taxes relief to landlords. I don't think, Daryl, there's been any update.
There's no further update.
Okay. In terms of this is from Stanlib. Nicholas, you want to know, in terms of the assets held for sale, the size, the type, you know, I think it's sitting at 400 million rand. The majority of those assets are probably somewhere between 50 and 80 million. It's been, I'd definitely say the process is slow. We certainly don't expect movement on that over the course of the next few months, Daryl.
No, I think, just the dealerships where we've reset rentals, those are certainly targeted for sale, but I don't expect you to receive any respectable price in this market. So it's held for sale. We'll review it as we go through, as we navigate this next few months.
And then carry on, because Joan wants to know, just again, in terms of what's happening in the office spaces, people look to potentially work more from home.
So,
how will we mitigate a potential drop in office space? What are our kind of views on how this trend could affect earnings or vacancies?
Thanks, Joan. The office space, we were anticipating a change in the office space by providing flexible space inside the buildings, inside our multi-tenanted buildings. So I do believe that if you look at what's the communication worldwide now, is they anticipate that an existing user would probably need 30% less space going forward. But where you have 2.9 years of WALE, those tenants are in, and we've got to navigate that space as we near the end of those terms. But going back, you've got to offer some flexible opportunities inside your buildings. What we have to craft now. In fact, for Sandown Valley, we have just completed a flexible service, a flexible office offering, which we were giving free to our tenants. So one of the first things we had spoken about across this portfolio was you've got to give up space to keep tenants. And we were looking at those kind of activities in across the portfolio. So I'll give you one example. In Balfour Mall, we were doing a study center for the kids of the communities that we serve. There's no rent payable. It's a facility that will enhance footfall, and it will win over the brand in the hearts and minds of the customers we serve. And when you go to a building like 4 Sandown Valley, you've got a multi-tenanted building. It's in the heart of Sandton. Again, somehow in the dialogue of the world we live in, you know, you've got Sandton on Rivonia Road, and you've got Sandton in Sandown Valley, and Sandton Sandown Valley doesn't get the same rentals as Bryanston, which doesn't make sense. And I do believe in a market where the demand returns, people will wake up to that there are opportunities in Sandton at the same rates as Bryanston. So we're giving flexible space in 4 Sandown Valley. We've got flexible space available in Design Quarter and again across the portfolio. So we will help tenants downscale, but keep those tenants in the building and attract new tenants to fill the space. So I guess it's very much being very agile, being close to the market, and giving your customers the opportunity of scaling down when they need to.
Yeah. Okay. I guess linked to that, just in terms of the property write-downs, and Daryl, you mentioned it, so this is from Bandia Standard Bank. Just how we looked at revaluations or the impairments at year-end relative to COVID and across the board. And I think, yeah. Bunny, let me deal offshore and then Daryl can come back, because I know you mentioned that we obviously looked at those valuations over the course of the final quarter. In Europe, we have seen certainly a slowdown in transactional activity, but over the last couple of weeks, we've seen that pick up. And there's actually been, certainly from a logistics perspective, in some ways there's been a sharpening of yields. Some of the bigger portfolios that were put on hold towards the back end of March have come back to the market over the course of the last few weeks and have come back at either similar or better pricing. So I think, we did think long and hard about it in relation to Europe. You saw the write-down in the UK, which really was linked to retail as opposed to the urban logistics or light industrial portfolio in the UK. Again, I think that we've seen the same here in South Africa. Retail harder hit, kind of your smaller retail. But Daryl, maybe just touch on SA retail, which is a lot, certainly where we are, a lot more resilient than some of the other
markets. Write-downs, if you have to sell, you're going to write down. We don't have to sell, and we're not a seller. I think that's very important for us. So there's no knee-jerk reaction. Of course, you can look at where we currently sit right now. You would imagine that cap rates are going to blow out. Of course, they would. And we're saying in the portfolio, they meet our long-term strategic objective. They are assets that have been selected. The tail is very thin in the portfolio, so you could take quite a soft exit on tail assets if there were buyers. And it might be actually the right thing for us to do. But on the quality assets, we're not writing down. I think that's pretty much where we are. It's a good portfolio, sound portfolio. And again, we believe that what we have to be cautious of being too bullish, but we like the assets. And these are not assets that have been marked for disposal. So why would you then write them down? This impact of 2, 3, or 4 months over a period of 5 or 6 or 10 years or the life of the asset would be, we believe, insignificant.
Okay, so Siren, I know you've got two questions here, just trying to deal with them. Just around Edcon, I know we put out a SENS announcement on that a few weeks ago, but Edcon in South Africa makes up less than, I think, 0.8-0.9% of our total revenue coming out of South Africa. And on a group basis, kind of consolidated income makes up less than 0.6%. There's been a lot of work done over the last year to 18 months in terms of moving that space around anyway and making sure that we, should they fall over, that we've got the ability to release that space fairly quickly. In terms of Newcastle and Design Quarter, they're not up for sale, certainly not assets that we would look to sell. Design Quarter, we've just put on hold a big refurbishment just pending the outcome or the length of this pandemic. I'd be quite excited about what that refurbishment looks like. We completely rehauled it or overhauled it last year. And Newcastle is one of our cash cows. So, yeah, there's certainly no intention to trade there. And then your question in relation to retaining dividends and are we looking to use that to bring down our LTV? The answer is no. It really is. It's around, we don't know what we don't know. And my reference to the fog earlier You know, it's difficult to know what's around the corner. Certainly, from a cash collection perspective, you know, what we know now is better than what we knew 2 weeks ago. And certainly the numbers reflect better even now in April, for the month of April, than we thought 2 weeks ago for April. And things are trending well. But we don't know what's around the corner. I think Daryl and I are conscious of the effect of these lockdowns on the impact on businesses and their ability to trade over time. And what that means from cash collection in 3, 4, 5 months from now. That is a big uncertainty, even though we believe that we've got a very strong business portfolio, strong tenants, and that is an unknown. And then I guess the latter piece is around the capital markets and the fact that there are refinancings underway. There's a lot of volatility there. And so I think from a board perspective, to be prudent, to be conservative here, cash is king. And you want to make sure that you are in the right place. So we've taken a prudent view to just hold on to that for now and work with regulators in terms of timing, etc., over time. So I think that is it in terms of the online questions. I think we'll move to the call and see if there are any questions coming in from listeners. I feel like a radio presenter here.
Gentlemen, we have no further questions on the line.
Okay. Daryl, you want to close?
I think you did it very well, Andrew. Thank you. Just if you ever answer questions about the property developments again, I'm going to start talking about the derivatives and the MTM mark-to-markets. Thank you, everyone. It's been a challenging time. We hope to return to work to some sense of normality over the next few weeks. We should stay safe. And it's been a very challenging year for us, but we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah. Thanks very much, everyone.